non-stop talk radio, streaming 24 hours a day.
Whoa, what am I hearing?
This is TalkZone.com, Internet Talk Radio. Let's get back to the Cyber Advisor on TalkZone.com. Once again, here is David Revelle.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dave Revelle, and welcome to the August 28th edition of the Cyber Advisor. If you'd like to join us on our show, the lines are open. You can dial toll-free at 888-463-6748. That's 888-GO-FOR-IT, 888-463-6748. Or reach me anytime on my email. It's dave@thecyberadvisor.com. Well, on Tuesday, President Obama announced that he'll nominate Ben Bernanke to a second term as chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank. In a short statement on Martha's Vineyard with Bernanke standing at his side, Obama said, Bernanke's background, temperament, courage, and creativity helped to prevent another Great Depression in 2008. I think it's a fascinating move by President Obama. It's questionable whether it shows strength or concern about the future of the economy. Certainly in the middle of this crisis is probably not a good time to change men. One of the most interesting takes on it was by Paul Krugman. Paul Krugman, as you know, is the Nobel laureate economist who writes often for the New York Times and has been a big supporter both of Ben Bernanke and of President Obama, campaigning actively for Obama during the last presidential election. And he had this to say on his blog on Tuesday on the reappointment of Ben Bernanke. He said, generally, I'm pleased. Bernanke has done a good job in the crisis. He's been far more aggressive and creative than almost anyone else would have been in his place, partly because he's a scholar of the Great Depression and partly because he took Japan's lost decades seriously and was therefore intellectually prepared for a liquidity trap world. I do have one qualm, though, which isn't really about Bernanke, but rather about the broader symbolism of the reappointment, namely, it unfortunately seems to be a reaffirmation of serious person syndrome. In other words, it's better to have been conventionally wrong than unconventionally right. Thus, you're not considered serious on national security unless you fought the case for invading Iraq, so on and so forth. And he says, that said, Ben Bernanke's performance over the past year deserves praise, and there's nobody I'd rather have in his position than Ben. Congratulations, Ben. Well, Obama did reappoint Ben Bernanke as chairman of the Fed down in Martha's Vineyard while he was on vacation, and hence you'll hear some of the opening comments by the president. And here's President Obama's announcement of Ben Bernanke's
appointment. I apologize for interrupting the relaxing that I told all of you to do, but I have an important announcement to make concerning the Federal Reserve. The man next to me, Ben Bernanke, has led the Fed through one of the worst financial crises that this nation and the world has ever faced. As an expert on the causes of the Great Depression, I'm sure Ben never imagined that he would be part of a team responsible for preventing another. But because of his background, his temperament, his courage, and his creativity, that's exactly what he has helped to achieve. And that is why I am reappointing him to another term as chairman of the Federal Reserve.
As one wag pointed out, it's somewhat faint praise to say that you have not gotten us in another Great Depression, kind of like saying to your young son or daughter, you have not crashed the family car. But at least it is true we have avoided some of the serious problems of an incurring a major depression. Now, Larry Lindsey, the former Fed, also a former member of the Federal Board of Directors, was fast to come out with his praise for Ben Bernanke. And as he says it here, here's Larry Lindsey.
Well, I think that John was right in mentioning that the president had other alternatives, members of his own party, and they included Larry, and they included Janet Yellen, Roger Ferguson. I think the president obviously made the right choice. Whenever you have someone who's doing a very good job, as Ben is, the right thing to do is reappoint him. Why take a chance on someone else? And I think the president should be commended for making the choice he did.
that Larry Lindsay is speaking of there was not himself, but rather Larry Summers, the chief economic advisor for President Obama. And as Lindsay points out, there were many alternatives, but probably the best alternative of them all was simply to reappoint Ben Bernanke. Now, the question then arose to Larry Lindsay, what kind of a grade would you give Ben Bernanke? And he continues his praise of the Federal Reserve Chairman here.
Well, first of all, no one has faced a crisis like this, in the modern Fed era. And, so there's really no basis for comparison. I think that the chairman probably deserves a 10 out of 10. He plowed his way through a very, very difficult crisis, used a lot of creativity, and certainly deserves the highest score possible. Maybe it might be that getting out of the current situation, unwinding, may be as big a challenge as solving the problem of the crisis of last fall.
Now, it's easy when dealing with the Federal Reserve Chairman to really kind of lose track of what his real fundamental job is. This is the nation's chief banker, and his chief constituents are all of the banks, primarily commercial banks now, throughout the country. And therein, we see that the real scope of the crisis and the challenge for Ben Bernanke going forward. Just this morning was the FDIC came out and listed a number of banks that are in potential trouble, that have trouble going forward. And the list has now expanded to about 416 problem U.S. banks and thrifts on an official watch list, rose more than a third to 416 in the second quarter of 2009 as bad loans continued to bite, but regulators saw signs of stabilization in this industry. The FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corp, said on Thursday that the industry swung back to a $3.7 billion loss in the second quarter after reporting a $7.6 billion profit in the first quarter. This was primarily due to costs associated with rising levels of bad loans and falling asset values. So loans, the loan loss provisions will have to be expanded, and the assets currently on the books may have to be written down. Now, a good person to find out just exactly how the banks are doing would be the chairman of the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. And here we have her recapping exactly how the banks stand. Note in this first recap that there's a $5.5 billion assessment for the FDIC insurance fund coming down to hit the banks. Here's Sheila Bear, the chairman of the FDIC, as she recaps the general outlook for banks currently.
Well, the industry had a net loss, but it had some fairly substantial non-recurring expenses, including a $5.5 billion insurance assessment. So operating income actually stayed a bit in positive territory. So all in all, it was a challenging quarter, but there were some bright signs. The non-current loan rate was going down a bit. The credit distress continues, but the rate of increase seems to be slowing a bit. So I think there were some glimmer of hopes, but, you know, it's going to take time for banks to clean up their balance sheets and work through this. And when the crisis started, we were dealing with a lot of complicated products that should not have been made and loans that should not have been made. And now we've kind of worked through that, and what we're seeing now is credit distress rate driving from the economic situation, people losing their jobs, having their hours cut back. And it will take some time to work through those credit losses. The banking sector also tends to be a lagging indicator. So as the economy improves, it will still take a bit longer for the banks to fully recover. But so we have some challenges ahead, but they're manageable, and we'll work through them.
Have you ever noticed that every sector would like to claim that they're a lagging indicator, that really the economy has to take off first before they can? We've seen that in housing. We seem to see that in every single area. I'm a lagging indicator, so I have to wait for the rest of it. Here's the crux of the matter. If you are a bank right now, here's what's looking at you. First of all, your outstanding loans, especially commercial real estate and residential real estate, are having problems. Your default rates are way up. you're getting less income off of those portfolios. The other major problem is that the FDIC is coming by and saying, okay, we're almost out of money. We're going to have to tap you on the shoulder and get more funds in here to keep the FDIC rolling. So at just the time when you have increased loan loss provision, you're also going to probably be looking at increased assessments from the FDIC. It's quite a squeeze that the banks are in. It's one of the primary reasons that you see the Fed funds rate as low as it is. This optimizes banks' profits right now by giving their cost of funds almost at zero and then the loans at whatever they charge out there. Well, the next question for Sheila Bair was, exactly where does the deposit insurance fund stand? Now, you may note that we're seeing all over news stories about how we're down to our last $10 billion on FDIC insurance provisions, and where do we go from here? Here's Sheila Bair's answer.
First and foremost, I want to say to all insured depositors, they're absolutely rock solid no matter what happens. The media, and I understand why they do, focus a lot on what our net worth, the deposit insurance fund, what the net worth is, which is to say that $10 billion is after we've already reserved $32 billion for projected failures over the next 12 months. We have a lot of cash. We have $22 billion cash on hand to cover the cost of failures, the cash outlays that are necessary, and up to $500 billion in borrowing authority. So insured depositors are absolutely covered. Nobody's ever lost a penny of insured deposits and never will. The question is really how long we keep relying on our industry funded reserves or at some point say we can't keep assessing the industry, we need to start borrowing. I don't think we're there yet. I think by the end of the third quarter, we'll have some more recent data and the board will be making and deciding whether we have another special assessment, how much it will be, and the timing for it. So I think we'd like the most recent data possible before making that decision. But we signaled in the second quarter that another special assessment was likely.
But we signaled in the second quarter that another special assessment is likely. That's that FDIC assessment that's coming right down the road at the banks and probably what they're looking at very, very shortly. Let's look at some of the numbers that she provided us here. She has $22 billion cash on hand. But remember that BB&T Bank, which we talked about last week, took over Colonial Bank shares. And that's about a $12 billion deal. And that's the difference between what they're saying. We have cash on hand, $22 billion. The press is saying, no, it's really 10. She really does have cash on hand, but she has a commitment over here on the $12 billion. Now, interestingly enough, the $500 billion borrowing authority is from the U.S. Treasury. And the question is whether or not the FDIC at some point during this crisis is going to have to tap into that credit line. Bets right now are running that it's pretty likely, given the rate at which we've burned through this so far, it's pretty doggone likely that the FDIC is going to have to go to Treasury and tap them for at least some of the $500 billion borrowing line that they have. So the next question and the critical question, if you're a banker, if you're sitting here in a banker's seat, you have really a couple of questions for Sheila Bair. One is, when will that assessment take place? Obviously, you'd like to slow that up. But also, there's kind of an arcane thing coming back down from the Financial Accounting Standards Board. Now, this is separate from FDIC. This does not include her, but it impacts every single bank in this country. FASB, the Financial Accounting Standards Board, has proposed that some of the bank assets be reclassified, so they'll no longer be capital assets, or at least they'll have to have a haircut. So the bank capital, everything staying the same, absolutely no changes at all. Bank capital is going to shrink because of the new FASB rules. They're going to end up at the end of the day with less capital because some of the capital is going to be haircutted. It's not going to be allowed to be counted at 100 cents on the dollar. And you'll hear her speak of some of the FASB changes and some of the new assessments that are coming right down the pike for the banker. Here's Sheila Bair one more time.
I would say on FAS 166 and 167, we put out some rules yesterday. I got less notice because of the private equity statement of policy. But, you know, we've known for some time these rules, and they are good rules. I think there's some issues about timing because, as you know, the industry is still under some distress. But getting these exposures back on balance sheet long-term is absolutely the right thing to do. We're asking for comment about whether, in terms of the risk-based capital requirements we impose on banks, whether we should show some flexibility or some type of phase-in period to help ease the additional capital that they will need to hold against these exposures as they come back on balance sheet, and we'll be making a decision on that later in the year. So I think the industry's known this is coming for some time. These assets coming on balance sheet was reflected in the Fed stress test, so it's something that we've been preparing for.
Now, so it goes back, as you may recall, a couple of weeks ago we said we had the analyst who said the governments can't decide whether they want to help the banks up or they want to swat them on the behind for not practicing fair business practice. This is exactly the type of thing. It's a little arcane. It's a little hard to understand, but this is exactly the type of thing that the Obama administration could do, step up and really help stimulate the economy. FASB, the Financial Accounting Standards Board, is coming down with very difficult new regulations for the bank. It's the ideal time to relax those regulations. Just do it for a matter of months, and you will help bank capitalization. Don't make the bank's capitalization more difficult now in a hard economic time. The other thing that you can do to really help the economy where it's needed is to postpone the assessments by the FDIC. Put them off a couple of months. We're still not out of the woods in the economy. And yes, it's difficult, but don't assess the banks, don't lower their capital even more by assessing them by the FDIC and by assessing them by FASB. It's an easy way to loosen up capital for the banks, which will in turn be passed on to consumers and small businesses and help the economy start growing. The bank's role in this economy as credit providers is absolutely critical. In every economy like this, we generally get into a credit crunch, which we are rapidly falling into. This is exactly the type of point that the administration can use to help boost credit policy. So relax FASB, postpone FDIC assessments, goes a long way to helping us right now to help the banks just when we need them. Well, it's time to take a short break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with a special look at what's happened over the last year in the economy. There's more right after this.